This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? I'm a Magic Pro now. I have a Magic Pro point. How's everybody doing?
That's just going to make everything worse for me.
Let's just start that over. I don't want to be the guy that says that.
No. That happened. That's staying in the podcast. And this is staying in the podcast.
I was kidding. I was totally kidding.
All right. So today we're back. We are now formally in Los Angeles. So all you guys who listened to our last podcast, we made it out of the desert. We are alive. It is the week before GP Charlotte, and it is the week after all of those invitational modern tournaments. So, like, the format has been kind of flipped on its head. Today, we are going to be talking about versatility and how versatile you can be in the modern format.
What that means to us is essentially, like, the different modes you can be getting out of multiple cards and how those cards can work to further your game plan in different ways. Which cards you could be playing, which cards you should be playing, et cetera, et cetera. It's been actually an exciting week just for modern content in general because all the Star City guys and channel guys are writing about it.
Oh, this is Christmas. I mean, like, because it's modern season for pre-TQs, because it's modern GP season, like, everything's, all of the content online is made for me, which is wonderful.
It's
really fun.
It's cool to hear, like, some of the top voices in the format write, like, long articles. Ari Lax had a really good article this week.
Yep.
Sam Black had a good one this week. Chapin had a good one this week, so.
Everybody. All right, so before we get into the subject at hand, I want to mention that you guys should follow us on Twitter. It's great. We are at the MMCast. You can tweet at us right now, and we will respond with you. If you're in any way derogatory, we might be derogatory back, but we'll argue with you all day long about anything you want to argue about.
Like, legit all day long. Like my phone blows up because Kester gets into, like, these, like, philosophical conversations about the nature of control in modern. And, like,
whoa, me and Travis Wu had a really long conversation about interaction and what that means on a physical level
and, like, a philosophical level. He, like, there's, like, the word philosophy was in one of those tweets, and I was like, I, like, got the alert on my phone, and it was like philosophical. I was like, oh my god, this is about magic cards. I was like, why is this happening to me right now?
If I was going to get into a philosophical conversation based on magic with any pro player, it'd probably be Travis Wu. All right. So, and beyond that, rate us on iTunes, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. All right, so let's move on to what we're talking about. What does versatility mean?
Well, versatility modern to me would be, and we're going to break this down into, like, a few different classes of cards, but there's a handful of cards that have been printed since the beginning of Magic that have multiple options. When you cast the spell, you can do X, Y, or Z, or you do X or Y, or if you do X, this happens, et cetera, et cetera. And what it is, usually they're cards that are designed with multiple medium to low level effects that you can choose from, but you're mitigating that medium to low level power against, like, a cost and the ability to do multiple things.
Right. Well, and to clarify, I think there's micro versatility and macro versatility. Today we're going to be mostly focusing on micro, which is what you just described, which is cards that have multiple choices or multiple modes that you can use differently when you use them. The macro one would be something like Remand, where, like, this card can be, or, like, Lightning Bolt, which, like, these are cards that can be used in, like, a few different ways, and, like, how you use them can really affect, like, your play lines and how you're going to play with the card. But in reality, it has one real option, and it just can be used differently.
And that actually speaks to an even larger point, which is sort of the definition of what a deck style really is and the cards within that deck and how you play them. The best example of this ever is the update to Flores' classic article, Who's the Beatdown? I believe they were talking about the Fairies deck back from, like, 07, the Lorwyn block, which was, like, this very powerful deck where you'd resolve Bitter Blossom and you had all your fairies.
Right.
resolve it into speed afterwards. It was a very sort of control-y deck, but what would happen is, in that matchup, sometimes you would have to switch over to the beatdown. You'd have to become very aggressive. So cards like Pestermite, for instance, or cards like...
Which is just a 1-1 creature that can attack, and you can attack, you know, it gets bigger because it's a fairy, or...
Cards like Spell Counter Spray that are supposed... You would just play them aggressively and just attack with them.
Which, though, even back to the macro-micro point, that is more of a macro-level versatility. Well, there are decks out there that are super micro-versatile, like Birthing Pod used to be.
Right.
Or like what Survival of the Fittest used to be, or, you know, right now, what different... like toolbox decks generally try and aim at being.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now into specific cards.
More card types. We should
why
define...
is versatility good? Why is it important to be versatile?
Well, let's just really quickly define the card types specifically that what we're talking about. We're going to go over each one here. So the card types in question are charms, commands, planeswalkers, and the sort of inherently versatile outlier cards.
These are creatures with like multiple abilities, or sometimes like Vidillion Click is a good example of a thing that like you can target your opponent or yourself, and so there's like a level of versatility there.
Sure. And so if you look back chronologically at the design of Magic since the beginning and how these were created, the original version of these cards were charms. They were pretty bad charms from Mirage, I think, unless I'm wrong here, but like there was a...
No, that's where they started, but I would argue that bad is a strong word. I think most, if not... not most, a chunk of them saw significant tournament play.
Sure. And I mean, some of the abilities on those cards are outdated. Obviously, like Vision Charm, for instance, mills four or phases something or changes land types. Like, stuff that is almost totally irrelevant by today's design standards.
Right.
So you're really looking at cards. It really came en vogue later on when I think probably in the modern era, you saw first in Time Spiral Block, you saw like cards like Evolution Charm and Piracy Charm. They were trying to make them a little more useful. Followed by in Lorwyn, when you had Planeswalkers and Commands introduced in the same set.
Right.
Followed by now we've seen charms in Return of Ravnica, charms in Alara Block, charms in Khons. We've seen another set of Commands.
We have a charm in every single color combination, but five colors and the four color, whatever, the Nephilim color combination.
And they will all be created at some point. It's design space that's unexplored. So it's... that's sort of the history of it, and as any kind of a competitive player likes versatility, it's kind of just goes without saying. It just means you have more options. So I think we're going to start first at charms.
Well, I do want to say before we get there that the reason versatility is, like, the way these cards are really made to work is this card, each of the abilities it has, is weak compared to its converted mana cost, or okay at best. But the fact that you get to choose between them is what really launches all of them into the next level of competitive play, and why they're all nowadays see some competitive play unless they like completely whiff. Like Gruul Charm was kind of a huge whiff.
It's a terrible card. It was not a terrible card. It's just pretty bad.
Yeah.
So that should actually, if you guys are modern fans and you read content and you stay up on the format, you probably know where this episode is coming from. And it's coming from the fact that Kolaghan's Command is the only card that anyone's talking about right now. It's in, you know, three or four of the top finishing archetypes, or at least the most prominent archetypes this last week. Everybody's talking about Kolaghan's Command. And we just were thinking about why it's good, and we wanted to sort of do an episode not just specifically about that card, but about related cards. And that's a good example of a card that its abilities are weak in comparison to its mana cost, but because you get two of them and they're relevant to the format, it's particularly interesting. We'll get to that.
So let's go through each of the different types and kind of talk about how they work and why their versatility is powerful.
So let's start with charms. So charms, as we said, you know, started way back in the day. They're still making them today. They have now made single color ones. They've made double color ones. They've made triple color ones. Every single charm is an instant speed card, and they all have three options. There are 26 charms legal in modern. There are more than that.
That's a lot of options.
26 charms. Of the 26 charms, I'll list off a couple that are actually see play in modern.
Right.
Jund Charm used to see play in sideboards out of Jund because it has Pyroclasmid instant speed attached to it, as well as a remove graveyards, and then a kind of irrelevant make a creature bigger ability. Esper Charm has seen play in Esper control lists because you can draw two cards, or
that card just does fucking it. That card just does everything.
That card's pretty sweet. You have tried to play that card before. Simic Charm recently has actually seen more play. The reason being, it's a strong card that I think is underplayed, and people are realizing this because it blanks Abrupt Decay, which is one of its best abilities.
Right. I do think if it finds a home, it's going to be an Infect Dex. That being said, this is a card that I've always wanted to be good and always seems to just not be good enough.
It's
like,
always a
none of the effects are worth two mana.
Yeah, but it is powerful because it blanks Abrupt Decay. It also blinks Lightning Bolt. It is also your own giant growth.
Right.
And it has that, like, I can bounce your Pestermite response to Twin ability.
Right,
so,
right.
So it's interesting. That sees some play. I've heard people play Rakdos Charm before, though it's pretty fringe. That's like a sideboard against
it's a
Twin.
I would argue that it's good against Twin, but, like, more importantly, it's just, like, a lot of these charms are great sideboard cards because they're like, oh, I can cover all of my different matchups vaguely.
Right. And this, we'll get into a little further why the charms are interesting, because that's sort of part of the conversation.
Right.
Is It Charm is a four of in several decks in Modern.
Yeah.
That card's very good.
Yeah, yeah. That's
one of the best
tier one staple.
Golgari Charm is a sideboard card that occasionally has seen play in main decks, but is, you know, it's strong for one or two abilities. And then the last one in Modern that sees play is Boros Charm, and that's a straight aggro card. Usually played for its four damage ability.
I mean, I would argue it's the strongest of these two color charms in the sense that the ability to Enzoo and burn, doden someone for four, protect a creature and or give a creature double strike with Enzoo is insane.
Because it means your Tarmogoyf can sometimes hit for 10.
Yeah.
It means, is it creatures you control gain indestructible? Permanents you control are indestructible.
Correct. So
it's good on every.
Really answers a board wipe if you're in when you're Zoo, you can overextend with it in your hand.
Answers Fulminator
Mage
to chomp your mana base down. Like it's just a very good card.
Right.
So that's the charms that see play, and we won't go through what each one does because that's too time consuming. But so something really interesting to think about these cards is you'll notice that the only three mana charms that I mentioned were Fringe, Esper Charm, and Jund Charm. And both of those, you sort of want them to be good. There's all the. There's
and this
all the...
is specifically in Modern because, like, it's standard, almost all of these saw play. I do think, and we mentioned this when we did the Conj review, that not Abzan, Sultai Charm has the best chance of seeing play in
being
Modern.
Good. Yeah,
it is an instant speed, almost abrupt decay in many ways, and that's kind of what you need to be looking for. The issue with it is Sultai in general is not heavily played in Modern as a color combination because. The best blue card is Cryptic, and it doesn't work with three color decks.
Well, so this is what I was going to say, and I was thinking about this when we talked about charms. So we will get to Kolaghan's Command in just a moment, but the reason Kolaghan's Command is interesting is because of three mana at instant speed, you get two things.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult to justify playing a three mana spell in Modern that only gets you one effect. It's hard. Three is a very, very relevant mana cost in Modern.
Right.
And them being
instant speed helps.
Yeah, big time. Big time. But any of the most powerful abilities you would get out of these charms, you know, like Sultai Charm, the most common ability you're going to use is probably the loot 2, discard 1. That's probably like if you don't have a target on turn 3, you'll just like sift through and see what happens.
I think that's the backup plan. I think really the thing you most use is kill a creature.
But I think the sort of what you have to look at is the safety plan. You say, okay, if I have this card in my opening hand and I happen to be up a matchup that this isn't specific against, which is the problem with the charms. That's
right.
That's the whole thing with charms.
Right.
Is like these have multiple abilities, but what if there isn't something for this to answer?
Right.
What does this do? And in that case, Sultai Charm draws two discards.
Instant speed
one,
draw filter.
Which is solid. You know, you look at all of these, like, you know, Teemer Charm, for instance.
Well, Teemer Charm is very similar to Teemer Charm is a whiff in every format.
Yeah, I mean, they for the most part at three mana, the backup ability on these cards just doesn't
do enough.
It's not what you want.
Right.
You want to hold open Remand usually, or hold open some other two mana instant speed spell or something like that, and be able to, you know, get value out of your charm. And you don't on turn three, you don't want to be getting a single ability.
Right.
Which is why I think those have never really caught on. And it's an interesting point of design, right?
Yeah.
That seems to be
Modern, the three mana slot, you need to be doing something more powerful than a mediocre choice.
Yes. Unless you're getting two things. Which is why
commands are so much stronger. We're
interesting.
Right.
They've done a good job on the charm design as far as the two mana charms go. Like they're all kind of right where they should be in terms of power level.
Avoiding the vaguely under like the just oddball underpowered ones. Almost every single one of them has seen some amount of play in the format.
Yeah, they've all got their place.
Even like blue white has seen some play.
Yeah, the charm that to me is the most interesting and doesn't see play, and this is just from like our Highlander format. I think Evolution Charm is a solid card.
What are its abilities?
It's probably not Modern playable. It's one green, one colorless for an instant. Choose one. Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand. Return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand, or target creature gains flying till end of turn. It's interesting because enough of the creatures in Modern have good ETB abilities.
Right.
So he gives you a reusable ETB ability on
a creature.
To
launch something also. Right, yeah, yeah.
You can make something big flying. It, like, pushes into Tarmogoyf for lethal in a lot of cases. And lastly, if you it allows you to keep, like, a two-lander, or like a one or two-lander on the draw.
Right. I do think this at two mana is kind of rough. I think the card of those one-color charms, the one I have seen being played the most in the format is the black one-drop one.
Oh, I've seen that. Midnight Charm. Midnight or Funeral? The one that's the time shifter or the one that isn't?
That one. Funeral Charm.
Target player discards a card. Target creature gets +2/-1. Or target creature gains Swamp Walk until end of turn.
Right. And the matchups I've seen that in are like, it's kind of when Infect was playing black still, they'd put it in Infect decks because it definitely like helped them get through it. It also is okay in like 8-rack decks. It's another one mana discard that also lets you kind of get some damage in.
Sometimes, yeah, Swamp Walk is good against Abzan and Energon. Yeah. Like, yeah, I can see that. Also, Instant Speed discard, we've talked about this before, is very
strong in general.
Which is actually kind of interesting with this card. Like, if you combine it with Snapcaster, it's possible that card with Snapcaster is actually an interesting card. Going like one for one, the ability to go like one for one and then Snapcastering it back on turn three and going one for one again.
Right.
Especially during draw step can be pretty powerful.
One something to not overlook is it can also be used as a removal spell against any X1s.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Dark Confidant, it kills.
Yeah. I mean, it kills Vendilion Click, it kills Dark Confidant, it kills a lot of things that are just like, oh, I can make my creature bigger, or I can make you just discard a card, so no matter what, I one for one you. But at its best, I get to kill your actual legit threat for one mana.
So yeah, that's where we stand on the charms. It seems to me they have done a good job of not breaking open design space with these cards as far as making any of them too powerful. I feel like they're all right where they should be. A couple of them are kind of underpowered. None of them are overpowered.
Right.
Now let's talk about commands.
All right. These are the shining. I mean, other than maybe Planeswalkers, these are the most powerful version of these kind of cards. And I want to say that up until now, Cryptic Command was like pretty much the best one by like a wide margin, with like all the other ones seeing maybe fringe play at best. But now that Colligan's Command is in the format, actually, the Dragon's Commands in general are taking over.
They're all very good. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Incendiary Command exists. Let's not get hasty.
I meant the new ones, which obviously is the case if you make them multicolor. So here's a really interesting piece, guys. The first thing is that it's very obvious doing two things is better than doing one thing, right?
Wait, no. Yeah. Whoa.
So the versatility of these cards, right? Like, their effect is mitigated by the fact that usually the abilities are a little less powerful, but in the case of the new cards, they're multicolor, so they're supposed to be harder to cast.
Right.
Perfect for Modern, because multicolor in Modern is the easiest thing in the world. You make something multicolor in Modern, it doesn't even change the game, unless you're making it, like, triple blue and, like, double black or something.
Well, I mean, I would argue that more mana symbols that are colored mana symbols in a cost of the same is more difficult to cast in Modern than multicolored in general.
So
Cryptic is harder than Colligan's Command.
Yes, this is true. So of the commands, there are 10 legal commands in Modern, because every single one was printed lower one or later. Of these 10, let's see. Atarka's Command sees significant play. That's a staple.
That's one of the top. I would say that's a tier one command.
Yep. Colligan's Command, I mean, it's currently seeing a lot of play, but we'll see what happens as we go. It's brand new, and people are just catching on right now.
I think that card will always be decent. I think that's an Abrupt Decay level card.
Powerful card, yeah. It's like going to be a staple.
Yeah.
Cryptic is the most played of all. Cryptic by far is the most played. Cryptic has seen the most play for the longest time.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, it's super powerful. Those three, aside from that, you have Primal Command has seen a little bit of fringe play.
Yeah, there are fringe decks that play Primal Command. I'd also say... Dromoka's Command is now currently... I mean, like, once again, all of these new commands were in a new land of what could be played or not. But, like, in Zoo, that card could see play. It also... I've seen some Fight Club lists sent to me using it and...
Obliterator.
So, like, it definitely has some powerful things involved with what it's trying to do.
I've tried designing with Profane before. I also have tried designing with Ojitai's Command. There are interesting things here. What you have to remember is that if you can come up with one good use for one ability on one of these cards, it's quite likely that another of the abilities on there will be relevant enough that if it's that powerful, if the one ability is, like, really good, you're probably going to be good. Like,
right. Like, especially with the command, but like with the commands, like a Tarkus command, just the dome someone for three is good enough to make the other things worth it.
Exactly. Like, the best example I can use is when I was designing with Ojutai's command, I was like, okay, they haven't printed a lot of cards that resurrect. Well, I mean, I ditched it at the end.
Right, right.
They haven't printed a lot of cards that resurrect based on mana cost. So that's like a restriction.
At instant speed.
Yeah, it's a restriction that you say, okay, there are some things that are difficult to cast or have weird casting costs that if I can end of turn get the thing back from my graveyard, maybe I can get some value from putting it in there. And also, it's going to draw me a card at the same time. So this is probably worth paying attention to. For instance, if this had been a charm and it had been one ability, it wouldn't have even been relevant.
Right.
Which is why the commands are particularly interesting. And
Because as long as you're getting one decent one, you can get a mediocre one.
It should be noted that in Modern, instant speed is the most, I think, the most important thing you can be doing. Like,
agreed.
And the commands have a really, really, really good...
At least after turn two, yeah.
...strong foothold for that reason. They all are interesting. The ones that are instant speed are all interesting for that reason.
Agreed. Okay, so moving on to some unique things about the commands. Something that you always need to be wary of is... And it's really unique because most effects, this doesn't really happen in a relevant way. But specifically with the commands, it seems to come up a lot. And people always kind of make this mistake is... If you target something with one of its abilities, so say Colligan's command,
right,
or Cryptic, and then you don't target something with the other ability, you do one of the other abilities, and they somehow get rid of that target, the spell is countered.
The whole spell fizzles.
The whole spell fizzles. So Cryptic, the classic one, is I bounce your creature, and they're like, well, I sack my creature, and
yeah.
Now you don't get the draw card, or you don't get the counter my spell, which is crazy, which is, you know, a very powerful way of countering that card. With Colligan's command, same deal. If they shock a thing and you kill the thing they're shocking, then you gain an advantage.
So of the commands here, you have a couple that have never seen any play. Austere command, Silumgar's command, so far. The Silumgar's command is very powerful. It's just cost 5 is the problem. But it's, I mean, what it does is really powerful. Primal command is very fringe, and it also costs 5, and it's a sorcery. You can't really play 5 mana sorceries in Modern. Just it kind of doesn't work, unless they just say I win.
Though, if I'm going to cast one, this one's not the worst. This has seen play. There are a few decks that do play this card, and I would say of the original commands, it's possibly the second best one.
It's fair.
Of the other ones, Incendiary Command doesn't see any play. And never really has seen play. The one that's possibly in contention with Primal is Profane Command.
Yeah, Profane Command, it's very good.
I mean, we'll be talking about that card more today.
Yeah.
But
we're doing a deck tech later that involves that card. That card is sweet. Like, the issue with it is that it's sorcery speed. If Profane Command had been instant speed, it would have just been, like...
Oh, yeah. Just possibly too good. Possibly it'd be Call Against Command.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about Primal Command that you mentioned, the ability on here that really puts it over the edge is put target non-creature permanent on top of its owner's library, because it means you can mini what the hell is that called?
Time Walk?
No, what's the card called though? Plow Under. You can single Plow Under and get a creature in your hand or something like that.
Putting their land on top of their library and then tutoring for a card is pretty crazy.
Yeah, Primal Command, like, there's design space as a brewer. The consistent play with this was in, I think, Shada Yasuka's deck from that world, that Players' Championship, the one where Finkel and Kibler had the blue-white deck.
Right.
And he had that crazy Eternal Command.
Yeah.
He played Eternal Witness, Aether Vial, Huntmaster of the Fells, this card, and Cryptic Command.
Yep.
And the idea was
and Snapcaster Mage.
And Snapcaster. The idea being that you would essentially get your Vial to 4, or to 3, so you could flash in Eternal Witness, returning Cryptic, then cast Cryptic, bouncing it to your hand, drawing a card, and then you could just like do it over
and
over.
Yeah, cycle
again.
Your Cryptics indefinitely. And when you can tap your opponent's whole team and counter a spell they have, you pretty much lock a player out of the game.
It should be noted, for anyone that hasn't played against it significantly, like if you're new to Modern, the reason Cryptic Command is so insanely powerful, like, it's far and away, in my opinion, the most powerful command.
Yeah.
Like, by far.
I don't think anyone would disagree with you. I mean, maybe people would argue that Colligan's Command could give it a run for its money in
just
the future, but like...
Yeah.
It's not.
The reason Cryptic is so nuts, first of all, it's blue. So a lot of your spells that are tricky and are bouncing go along with it. Once you get to 4, it means it doesn't matter if your opponent's attacking for 27. You tap their board and get an extra draw.
Right.
Is like, and against Snapcaster decks, it often will be like...
And that's its worst mode is tap your team, draw a card.
Yeah, but that's so powerful.
And that's really good.
Yeah, like the fact that you can like you set up like a turn 4, like, okay, flash in something and bounce a creature or whatever block, Turn five, I'll cryptic draw a bouncer board. Turn right. six, flash and Snapcaster, flash it back, tap your board, draw a card. It's just yep. like, it's
Yeah, and its
so...
relationship with Snapcaster Mage is not to be belittled. Yeah. I mean, like, it really does... Versatility is important, and if you even look at the new commands, they kind of winked at how good Cryptic was by giving both of the blue ones half of the abilities that Cryptic has.
Right.
So, like, the blue-white one, Ojutai's command, can counter a creature and... Or count...
Counter non-creature.
Counter non-creature.
Or counter remove soul, I think. Yeah, it's remove soul.
Yeah. It's counter a creature and bounce a thing, yeah. and the other one can counter a creature and draw a card. Or
no,
counter a non-creature and draw a card.
You're mixing it up.
I'm all wrong. Okay.
Ojutai's command draws a card, gains 4 life, counters a creature, or resurrects a creature with 2 converted mana cost,
okay.
2 or less.
Yeah, yeah.
And Silumgar's command, I believe, is -3/-3 to a creature, destroy a planeswalker, return target permanent to owner's hand, or counter target non-creature spell.
Right, so it's half and half. So yeah. like they literally split Cryptic command and then give them like each like weird trinket abilities.
Yeah, but mana cost in Modern is king. It's king. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like, I don't care how powerful you make a card that costs 5. It costs 5. Like,
yeah.
Even if it's instant speed. Like, you have to be playing
Name the amount of 5 drops that see play in the format that aren't in Tron.
Gideon, sometimes.
And Argus ramp decks, so like Amulet Bloom.
Like, yeah, sometimes Gideon will see play.
Gideon, Kyranos, and Batterskull?
Yeah.
And Batterskull is not seeing play anymore because Call Against Commands everywhere?
Command. Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. The commands are sweet. Let's... you know something should be pointed out? Just something that I was just thinking about right now. Wayne England did the art on the original series of 5 in Lorwyn.
Okay.
And if you ever think about, like, magic art, like, I don't think about it as much as I used to when I was a kid. Obviously, art drew me to the game when I was a kid.
Right.
But think about, like, these, they're all...
Are you Vorthosing out on us for, like, the first time on this podcast history?
They're really cool looking. Like, the art's really sweet, especially on Cryptic. But, like, they're all the same design.
Yeah, it's like a jar or, like, a container and, like, a weird circular symbol-y thing that's supposed to be the color.
Yeah, some sort of cool, like, effervescent magic-looking stuff coming out of it. And what's cool about that is that if you owned all those pieces of art or even one of those pieces of art on your wall, it wouldn't specifically look like a magic card. It's not like a dragon being slayed by a knight.
True.
It's just, like, kind of cool. And somebody that's like, oh, what is that?
I mean, you can kind of say the black one's kind of a dragon. Kind of.
It's true. It's like a dragon skull.
Yeah.
It's really saying. Cool.
Yep. Okay.
I kind of want to own them all.
So, next, Planeswalkers. We've definitely talked about this before. I think something that is overlooked with the versatility of Planeswalkers is that if they are a threat, they are also a fog. Because your opponent has to attack them to kill them, which is a big game.
Yeah, so, okay, something should be talked about right now is that inexperienced players that recognize the power of a Planeswalker, because it's a mythic rare and it's a powerful card, will often misplay in light of a Planeswalker hitting the table. Because their theory will be, I have to get this off the table.
Right.
All my resources will go towards getting this off the table. And in a lot of cases, that'll take them 2 or 3 turns, which is invaluable in Modern. Like,
right.
So I talked about this because recently I was working.
Ashiok is a great example in Standard. This isn't a Modern point, but for Standard players, what Ashiok does is she just gets huge really quickly. Like,
yeah.
Her ultimate is decent, but like the important thing is that your opponent's going to just keep attacking her because, or him, I guess it's Androgynous, but the point more being, because she is just threatening to always be playing their best creatures out of their deck, and they don't want to be fighting against their best creatures because they picked good creatures, especially if you're playing her against the opponent, they have to keep going against her. But she's so fat that, like, there's no way for them to kill her easily. So, like, and then the entire time you're like, well, okay, you're paying attention to the Ashiok. I'm going to draw a bunch of cards and do stuff on my turn while you're, like, wasting your time with my 3-drop. And just, like, that by itself is the most powerful ability on Ashiok. The fact that she threatens to be important later, but you have to kill her now, so, like, they're going to waste their time while you can do other stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. So, they've never printed a 1-mana Planeswalker. They've printed one...
Deathrite Shaman.
I was just going to say, Deathrite Shaman is the 1-mana Planeswalker.
Maybe you could make an argument for the guy, the 1-drop, does 2 damage. Lavamancer?
I mean, not like
maybe
Deathrite.
You can maybe make an argument.
Deathrite, I was gonna say, is the unofficial 1-drop Planeswalker, and it's insanity when you think about that.
Oh yeah,
card.
It was too good. It was banned in Modern, and it should stay banned. And I challenge anyone on Twitter to challenge me
that
on that point.
That card's too good.
Not good for the format.
Weirdly enough, though, they've only designed 1 2-mana Planeswalker, and it's
terrible,
horrible. I remember watching Brad Nelson trying to make a case for this card at one point in Standard, like, oh, Tybalt's actually kind of good, you should play Tybalt, watch this video. And I was like,
it seems bad. Well, here's the thing with Tybalt. they could make a good two mana planeswalker, but the moment it's way too hard at that mana cost to balance a card. And so they went the opposite direction of making it, you know what, let's be safe, let's make it bad. We checked the box, there's now a two mana planeswalker, and then that was it. Interesting enough, his card did terrible, but he was one of the highest in the Godbook study of cards people thought were really cool.
Interesting.
So he is probably going to return. Tybalt, the character, is liked.
Just because he's, like, devilish looking?
He's, like, a cool devil dude that, like, does stuff.
But he's, like, some combination of, like, Satan and Darth Maul.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's, like, kind of sweet looking. He's got, like a pretty badass goatee. Yeah, all right, he's bad.
But more to the point, so in Modern, if you look at it, there's been only so many Planeswalkers that have been exceptionally powerful. The big ones seem to always see play, so the Ugins and the Karns. If you look at what Liliana is doing, she's obviously, we did an entire episode on Liliana. Beyond that, it kind of drops off, like, Baby Jace has seen some play, Elsbeth sees some play, Gideon sees some play, Tezzeret sees some play, but like, for the most part, Planeswalkers aren't played that much because, as we mentioned earlier, and one of the reasons some of the commands are so powerful, is instant speed versatility is more important than sorcery speed versatility.
Yeah, if we go through the list really quickly, there are 51 legal Planeswalkers in Modern. And you go through the list...
That grows by 5 every year.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're very smart when it comes to designing them correctly. So if you go through this list, of the 51, the number of these that have seen even fringe tier 1, 2, or 3 play... You're literally looking at, like, Jace Beleriand has occasionally seen play in some decks. I would say some decks have tried to play him. And Liliana of the Veil is amazing.
That format staple.
Ajani Vengeance has seen a very significant amount of play.
Yep.
Chandra Pyromaster has seen some.
Yep. I would say it's a staple. I would say it's like a lower level staple.
Yep. People play it. Elspeth Knight Errants has seen a lot of play. I haven't really ever seen Garrick Relentless.
Actually, I've seen a lot of lists over from this last weekend.
Running Garrick. Relentless
has become,
or Wildspeaker?
Wildspeaker. Wildspeaker.
Yeah, not Relentless. Relentless is the Innistrad one. That's the one that fights and then searches.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Wildspeaker is seeing play in that sweet Utopia Sprawl deck.
Yeah.
Where you can get 4 mana on turn 2 with the Arbor Elf and then cast Garrick on turn 2 and then untap your lands.
Yep.
And get 3 more mana on turn 2.
Really good.
7 mana on turn 2.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
Like, that seems sweet. Real cool. Yeah, beyond that, Gideon, nothing. Jace, our character, thought sees some play because Souls is really good. That's the one that's -1/-1.
And it shuts down Affinity a little bit. It definitely is pretty good. I got to cast it over the weekend and was definitely happy about what it was doing for the deck I was playing it in.
It's sweet. Now, like, I'll finish the list because it gets, like, past 4 mana, it gets real bad. Like, none of these. I've seen a mono red Kothless before, but it's super rare. Both Sorin's have seen a little bit of play.
Old Sorin was a staple in black white tokens until New Sorin was printed, and now New Sorin is a staple in black white tokens.
Significantly better. Tezzeret, there are Tezzeret decks.
Four
mana Tezzeret. We've
four
talked.
Mana Tezzeret has seen some play. I would say 4 mana Tezzeret has seen more play than 5 mana Tezzeret,
for
though
sure.
5 mana Tezzeret has seen play and is more powerful in older formats.
Beyond that, you have like the couple decks that played Garrick Primal Hunter. Gideon has seen.
Has seen probably the most play once you get to the higher levels until you reach the Ugins and the Karns.
Because at 5, like, yeah, Tanya, Tez, like, none of those have seen significant play.
Yeah. What we mentioned this before, mana cost is obviously important. Once you get to the higher levels, the only cards that are decks that are going to be playing expensive cards are the decks that are ramping to those cards. But beyond that, I do want to mention something with Planeswalkers. They are functionally very similar to commands in the sense that you get multiple abilities out of them, but they're all micro abilities. Normally, a Planeswalker's +1 is a small effect. Its minus is a slightly bigger effect, and its ultimate doesn't happen for a while. And then it has, like, all of them have a miniature, you have to attack me or expend a card on me or I'm a problem.
Well, they all do something. Their minus, every one of their minuses, or in the higher mana,
the ones that are good
zeros,
at seeing play,
they do something that is basically a minor version of a playable spell.
Yeah.
So the best example you can really think of is Ajani Vengeance. He's the one that, like,
literally
has
Lightning Helixes something.
Yeah.
Before.
For -2, he goes to 1, and he Lightning Helixes. Right.
Yep.
Him and probably Liliana are the two that you would reference as, like, straight spell. Liliana comes out on 3. Her -2 is Diabolic Edict. Like, target
player.
What?
It's, oh, yeah, you're correct. Sorry.
Diabolic Edict, target player sacrifices a creature.
Yep.
That's why she's so powerful. She's a removal spell and an attrition spell.
And in modern design, 3 mana for a Diabolic Edict is the correct power level for that card.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, if you see any standard version of that card is going to be at 3 mana 90% of the time.
Yeah, I guess you would never draw a card for 3 mana, so Jace Beleriand is underpowered in that sense. You would never
But Jace does something very similar to what Bob does without the pain, and that's it's not, you can't look at it as like I'm only getting this. What Jace does is he sticks on the board pretty much forever beyond that point, and that's where he starts being really good.
Yeah, and I would say beyond those, the abilities start to get like pretty
wonky.
Yeah.
Right. So as we're talking about this podcast, versatility is important. Almost all these cards do 2 things, if not more. And if you look at the one banned Planeswalker in the format, Jace the Mind Sculptor, he does 4 things, which is, and all of them are good. So like,
and he was just the most absurd card ever printed.
Everything's absurd on that card. I mean, like everything from Fate, like his worst ability is something that just straight up locks a person out of the game.
He's beyond powerful. He's also unfun for the opponent.
Yep.
He's, for 0, he draws you a card and also makes your hand better. And also,
with Fetch Lands, he arguably draws you 3 cards.
He's at 3. Like, yeah. That is so preposterous that somebody has to have a Lightning Bolt in hand or a
creature. And you have to brainstorm. If you plus him, if you're playing against a replay, you plus, and then you're basically brainstorming and they can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
They're down 2 cards, and they're definitely not drawing a good one for now on.
So we don't need to talk about Jace anymore because he's not legal in Modern.
Right.
So
I do want to talk about his like legality at some point in the future. But so that's kind of versatility. The last kind of type of card that's versatile is the inherent versatility cards. We mentioned Vendilion Click as an example of this. Something I do want to mention is Fuse cards, which are kind of like not Fuse cards, double cards, where it's like, they're basically commands, but you get different mana costs for what you're paying for each of the different choices.
Yeah. Reaching for my water.
And like, these are all kind of effects. All of them are, what's happening is you get a choice and you need to be able to make the best choice. And the reason pros generally like control historically is because they like playing decks that like to leverage their ability to make choices to the highest percentage, because they are going to make the correct choice more often than someone who is not a pro. And the reason charms and commands and planeswalkers are so powerful is because if you're able to make the correct choice, you're getting 110% from that card.
I would totally agree with you. Planeswalkers represent, I mean, they represent something that is so interesting in Modern, which is that they're more powerful than anything that can be done in Magic. They're the most powerful cards that exist. But in Modern, because they're at sorcery speed and their abilities are at sorcery speed,
and they have literally a ceiling at 3 mana or above.
Yeah,
or
means
a floor.
They can't really exist as format staples in every deck. They have to be played, the right ones have to be played in the right decks.
Well, and they're legendary, so it's hard to play more than one unless that lends it to it. But I mean, like, don't get us wrong. Like, Liliana of the Veil has been a format pillar.
One of the 5 format pillars.
Like, since she's existed in the format.
Hilarious, like, that Lightning Bolt and Liliana get played in the same deck. Like,
it's not to be belittle how powerful these planeswalkers are. It's just the effect they need to have on the board has to on purpose lock an opponent out of the game. And it's not good for Magic to print those cards. Liliana of the Veil might have been a mistake to print, but it's obviously inherently powerful, and it does something very strong in the format, and that's why you see it play. When you play them.
Somebody could argue that Lightning Bolt, Abrupt Decay, Liliana of the Veil, and Tarmogoyf are 4 of the best 6 cards in Modern, in which case you get to play 4 of the best 6 cards in Modern in Jund if you play it.
Yep. And Colligan's Command.
That's not 1 of the 4 best cards. So anyway, let's move on to the last sort of the inherently versatile cards that aren't in those classes. There's a few. I mean, there's not a ton. Like, cards that have a lot of modes are, generally speaking, in the category.
Yeah, like, I would say, like, okay, so we mentioned Vendilion Click because you can target yourself, your opponent. Lightning Bolt is kind of in this kind of family of
that's
cards.
That's, like, in the macro versatility.
Like, well, not even in micro, like, you have the choice of your opponent or creature. So there are 2 choices on that card, which is, in Burn, that's, like, a legitimate choice you have to make.
The most versatile card in Modern that is not one of these is Snapcaster Mage by far.
But it's not because the card Snapcaster Mage is text written on it. It's because whatever's in the graveyard is a choice.
But that's ultimately the choice. And that's why it's so powerful. Snapcaster is one of the 10 best cards in Modern by far.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's, I mean,
eventually we probably should do a top 10 everything, but that'll be, like,
Snap is like...
That'll be like year anniversary.
Snap is like...
Episode.
Snap is probably a card that is on the level of Lily in terms of his power level that we could do a whole episode on Snapcaster Mage. Just like...
Yeah. Innistrad block.
Yeah, so ridiculous.
So many good things from that era. All right. So I do... You know, we're running low. I do want to actually do the deck for today.
Oh,
so
we haven't done a deck
for a while.
Deck.
So we promised this to you guys last week. Ben has been working on this. A little bit of a background. Ben, what is this deck? Where did it come from?
All right. So I started working on this deck back like 3-4 weeks ago. And it's sort of a hybrid of a few different things. There's some pet cards involved. There's like... I'll be honest with you guys. It started with one card. And that was Ojutai's Command. That was the first card that sort of keyed me into like, all right, I think this card's kind of sweet. It's instant speed. Like, I don't have to tap out. What can I do with this card, right?
Before we continue, is the card still in the deck?
No.
Okay.
We cut the card from the deck.
All right, continue. So,
as I mentioned earlier, cards that reference mana cost in terms of their creature resurrection abilities, there's only a couple that have done this, right? Revelark does it, or is Revelark power?
Power.
Revelark's power. So that's its own sort of like little puzzle. But like, this card does it. Profane Command does it. There's a couple creatures over time that have done it. But ultimately, it's when it's open-ended like this and it's attached to a card that can do something else like draw your card, I was like, okay, what can I do with this? I've always had a thing for Mirror Superior. I've always been like, that's a 5/6 for two. There's some clunky ways to cast this people have tried. What can I do to try to make this better? So I started to think, okay, you know, if I'm gonna get something out of my graveyard, what things are gonna be good at two mana? So you look, okay, Superion's pretty good. Apocrysite has some game with that. Comes in as a 4/4 directly from your graveyard. I'm not gonna explain what each of these cards does yet because it's just too much shenanigans. We'll kind of get to that a little later. But I started to brew with this. What I ended up coming up with is, okay, the shell of a card that resurrects from your graveyard and Aethervile is pretty decent. So if you can find cards that interact with both Aethervile and have a low mana cost that can be targeted, maybe you have something. The initial version of this deck was Bant, and it played Mirror Superior. It played so Mirror Superior is 2 mana for a 5/6 artifact creature. Can only be cast using mana produced by creatures. Still can be vialed in it too. Still can be resurrected from your graveyard by Ojutai's Command or Profane Command.
Right. So I guess to kind of break down where it's at now.
Where it's at now is that we realized that some of the necessary cards in the blue, white, green version were not as powerful as we needed them to be to compete with other cards in the format.
Those blue cards, because this isn't the format for blue.
No.
All you blue mages, get out of here.
And the blue cards that we were going to play in this deck, because you want it to be kind of a creature-heavy deck, because what we realized was Collected Company is the other best card in the deck. The combination of Collected Company and Aethervile means you have 8 ways to get these weird cards out of your hand. Add to that anything that references your graveyard, you're looking at about 10 ways to get these cards out of your hand. So we cut blue because you had to play cards like Thirst for Knowledge to support the strategy, and that's not a creature. Collected Company wants 24, 25, 26 creatures. We ended up realizing that the cards necessary were like Dark Confidant's really good, because if everything in the deck's going to be a low mana cost, you'd love to draw more cards. He costs 2. Hypocrisite costs 2. Mirror Superior costs 2. If you play Burning Tree Emissary, which ended up being sort of the key to unlocking the power of the deck, which is a hybrid green-red 2-drop, creates a 2-2, enters the battlefield and gives you 2 mana, you could play Superior directly off the card, which means on turn 2, you can get a 2-2 and a 5-6. 7 power on turn 2 is pretty good.
So I guess from the perspective, I've played a lot against this deck, and something that's important to keep in mind is one of the strengths of what this deck is trying to do, and I normally am drinking Haterade, but I'm more on board with this deck than normal, is because it's every card, it's literally playing the most powerful 2-drops that are out there. Even if there's restrictions to casting them, it's playing them. And to do that, you're allowed to cut low on mana, so you're down to 20 lands.
We're playing Tarmogoyf, by the way.
Play Aethervile. Yeah, obviously we're playing Tarmogoyf. Aethervile and play Collected Company to kind of allow you to cheat these things into play and get as much value as possible and make sure you're always hitting those Collected Companies. Making sure when your opponent is drawing lands and flooding out, you're never flooding out. And making it so that Aethervile just is always drawing you gas. Like, every card is allowing you to just to keep that train going, and there's no real bad top decks.
Yeah, it got to play 20 land, and because you're playing green, white, black, you can even play 4 Horizon Canopies, which effectively means you're almost playing 16 lands.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
And also, because, so you guys might be like, oh, well, what other creature? Every single creature in the deck, The final list, I think, is 27 creatures. Every single creature is a 2-drop.
Right. What and what are the cards that aren't creatures other than the lands?
There's barely any. It plays 4 Collected Company, 4 right. Ethervile, 3 Abrupt Decay. So that's 11. What am I forgetting?
And the 2 Profane Command?
2 Profane Command.
You heard it. Profane Command.
So 13, 27, 20. Yep, that's exactly right. That's the entire build. The sweetest thing about Horizon Canopy in this deck, and your Vial always being at 2, if you pop a Horizon Canopy at any point in time, you have a near 50% chance of top decking a 2-drop that will immediately be Vialed in.
Right.
It just means, like, during combat situations, there's crazy things you can do. Like, at 20 land, if you don't have a Superior you need, often you'll keep a 1-lander. You'll end up drawing your second land on turn 3, flashing in Burning Tree Emissary to get to 4
right.
to cast Collected Company on turn 3.
Well, and the fact that you're doing that once you have Aether Vial in play, it allows you to do a lot of interesting things with other cards you're playing. So you're playing Pack Rat and Fauna Shaman, which I think actually interact very similarly in the deck, where they let you at instant speed either flash in a rat and make a second rat, so you get to protect your rats and you now just can start killing your opponent with a giant army. Or with Fauna Shaman, you can discard a card, get any creature in your deck you possibly could need, and then be able to flash it in immediately. So it allows you to kind of play this game that your opponent literally has to just be able to react to every card in your deck at one point.
It should be noted, like, because you have so many slots for creatures, you get to play all the power, so you get to play your 4 Tarmogoyf and 4 Superior, I think 3 Hypocrisite. So that's right there, that's your 11, like, power hits on Collected Company.
Right, you have, like, a 30% chance of always hitting 9 power.
Yeah, you'll often get 9 to 10 power off Collected Company. But on top of that, it means you have 2 Spellskites in the main deck, you have a Scavenging Ooze, you have 2 Tide Hollow Sculler, you have, Pack Rat. You have all these different ways for you to win in different ways, and all these different ways to interact with your opponent based on creatures, so that, I mean, Pride Mage, I think, comes out of the board. We had it in the main deck at one point. If you have that Fauna Shaman, Aether Vial engine set up, you're kind of able to interact in all these cool things.
Like, it plays in a weird Birthing Pod-esque mode of just like, I'm going to value you out by whatever I draw.
But with a super low curve and super mana efficient. Yeah. Like, one of the coolest, like, there's a couple of cool plays we'll mention, then we'll kind of get into matchups. But, like, some of the things you can do in the deck are, once you have that engine set up, I've had games against Amulet where they go for Summoner's Pact to get their prime time, and then, like, I will flash in Tide Hollow Sculler during draw step after they've gotten the Primeval Titan before they can cast it.
Right.
To get it out of their hand, and then they don't have any removal, and they don't, like, they have to pay for it. Like,
right.
There's just some really interesting plays. Same with Spellskite. You can search up Spellskite and flash it in response to Twin, or in response to Titan in that same deck when they're trying to go for the Slayer Stronghold and the Sun Home Fortress of the Legion.
Right.
You can redirect both triggers to Spellskite.
Yep.
So you have the 1 Scavenging Ooze to interact with Malyra combos and things like that. So it's interesting. I mean, we were super skeptical at first. I'm always hot on my decks, but generally speaking, I'll give up pretty fast.
There's grains of salt.
Yeah, this deck was surprising because we found that some of its best matchups at the time of design were some of the strongest decks in the format, and it was posting a pretty lofty win percentages.
So as the disclaimer for the deck, it is weak to call against Command.
And this, pretty much when testing, we discovered a couple things. Call Against Command was in discussion at the time amongst, like, the pro community. Currently, it's at an all-time high.
Yeah.
That's really good against us, as well as the fact that 2 of the weaker matchups are Tron and Amulet.
Right.
Which won events last weekend.
Yeah, we literally predicted 1-1, like, these are the decks that are going to win next this weekend.
If you expect to go against Tron, Amulet, and a bunch of Kolaghan's Command, it's a pretty tough deck.
Right. So this weekend this would not be a good choice for GP Charlotte, for instance, or any pre-TQs you might be playing in.
Yeah. The thing that you want to remember with this deck, like, if you are listening and interested, the things that this deck does that are very powerful, that you have a chance of just stealing wins out of nowhere with, are turn 2, Burning Tree Emissary and Emir Superior. That's very powerful. Turn 1, Aether Vial, with, like, Tarmogoyf on turn 2 or something, where you can get Tarmogoyf and follow it up with Mir Superior at instant speed. It means you can have 3 powerful creatures by turn 3.
Right.
And the last thing it does that's very good is Pack Rat with Aether Vial. Flashing in Pack Rat end of turn 3, and then discarding a card to make a second rat, often means by turn 4 you will
Just start vomiting creatures into the board, and they can't do a lot with the cards they have available to them.
You'll often be in a position that if they don't have a board wipe, within a couple turns, you're going to have a whole team of 5/5s.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen, and it's very good. Like, those are the strongest things the deck can do. And then Collect the Company for 10 power.
So yeah, that's the deck. Let's walk it through the gauntlets. So black-green decks. Now, we kind of have to split this. I would say you're actually favored against Abzan because you outvalue them. And the Profane Commands help you get through the tokens just to hit for enough damage to kill them.
Yeah, I would say this was the matchup I was most surprised in testing that we were good against. And it was, I think the biggest reason is there's a couple things here. First of all, Mir Superior is largely consistently bigger than Tarmogoyf.
And Rhino.
And Rhino. So they're two biggest threats. Both either smaller. Bounce off of or die to your best threats. Profane Command allows you to get through Lingering Souls, but it also means that post-combat, after a Tarmogoyf bounce, you can shrink their Goyf by 1 point and kill them. Kill their Goyf.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sort of attrition matchup of them, like, killing a Superior or something like that means that on turn four, your ability to do the same trick with Profane, say, killing a creature post-combat and getting back something that costs two.
It's kind of your collected companies five and six.
Yeah, against them in particular, it's very, very good. You just sort of have a lot of their best cards don't matter against you. By the time you have an active Vial, Liliana or a Hand Disruption spell don't do as much against you. Same with Collected Company. They activate Liliana or they try to cast Thoughtseize, and you can just instant speed get things into play.
Right.
So you're actually quite good against them. I wouldn't say heavily favored, but I would say you're 58 or 59% game okay. one.
Yeah, yeah.
And after sideboarding, you probably go closer to 50-50. Their ability to just bring in more artifact hate. Artifact hate's the hardest thing
right.
against you.
Though you do get saved by the fact that your deck, A, you have some anti-artifact hate plans, like Impact Rat and Fauna Shaman plans, but you also are saved by the fact that people don't know what the hell you're doing. So, you might just have a game where you're like, Tarmogoyf, Bob, Sack a Land to get more card advantage, and just, Abrupt Decay your thing, kill you. The normal Abzan plays of just killing people with Tarmogoyf exist in the deck.
Yeah.
And so they might be like, oh, I have to bring Graveyard Hate because it's a Tarmogoyf deck or right. something. And you're just like, oh no, my cards are artifacts. Right. So you definitely have, you kind of do what Affinity or Tarm Affinity does, where you have the Goyf, you have the Pack Rat, you have the threats that are resistant to artifact hate, just in case they just bring in Stony Silence against you to try and brick you.
It definitely seems like, even after boarding, we played a bunch of matches of five, and I won 3 out of 5 after boarding in a lot of cases. So I think that's kind of proof that the deck is good against the now.
Right. In a matchup, classically, the thing you have to remember about black-green is black-green is good because it's decent against everything. It's not great. It's a 60% against the field deck. And if you are matching them at that 60% win rate or betting them, then you're favored in that matchup.
And Jund, if it should be noted, is the new black-green X deck that's getting played again.
And that has Colligan Command, and I'm guessing that Colligan Command in the main gives them the percentage points they need over you.
That and Terminate.
Terminate, correct.
Both. Path is in some ways interesting for you because it ramps you and you're right. such a low curve. Often you're stuck on two lands or three lands. So Path is kind of not the worst thing for you. But then again, they don't have Path. They have Terminate and you have Profane Command. So it's sort of, I actually, Jund is just getting popular. We haven't tested against Jund yet.
Correct.
I'm guessing Jund is better. Let's move on to Twin. Traditional Blue-Red Twin, this is our best matchup. Traditional Blue-Red Twin is the best thing that this deck can play against.
Why? Yeah.
You have two main deck Spellskite, three main deck Abrupt Decay, and you have instant speed threats and aggressive threats on two. Resolving Superior off of Burning Tree on turn two on the play against Twin, unless they have Spell Snare, unless you just brick on all the rest of your draws, will often mean you win the game. Because one of the other cards you're going to have in your hand will be one of your three decays or one of your two Spellskites, or Fauna Shaman or some way to access it. And they just don't have a good way early to get your threats off the table. They might be scrambling to get rid of your 5/6. By the time they can even do it, you flash in Collected Company. You might even just hit Spellskite and a Tarmogoyf. I mean, Tarmogoyf is traditionally one of the best things you can play against Twin, resolving it on turn two. But instead of Tarmogoyf sometimes, which is too small and dies to Bolt, you have a 5/6 that's actually a 5/6 on turn two. Resolving 7 power on turn two on the play against them is very, very hard for them to interact with. They can Bolt the 2/2, but you don't care. So that's pretty interesting. I think the Grixis Twin lists are much better against you. Their ability to have Disruption on turn one to get rid of, say, your Burning Tree is really good. Kolaghan's Command, once again, is insane.
Right.
It's just really good. Your best play in the whole deck gets countered exactly by 2 damage and destroy an artifact. They can also destroy your vial.
Right. It definitely hurts you than where you. But I would say, like, and with going back to Jund a little bit, is they're cutting down on their normal answer towards Aether Vial. They're leaning so heavily on Colgan's command. And once again, you outdraw their value cards. They're two for running away you, but you're drawing gas the whole game. And if they're not killing you quickly, it doesn't help. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying it's not as bad as... Colgan's command is not as blowouty as people, I think it is currently.
Sure. That's fair. Burn, we did some testing against Burn. Game one against Burn is really hard.
Which, for most matchups, that's true with Burn.
Yeah. What we found was that you can shift the mana base in such a way, because so many of the things in the deck are cast off of like Collected Company and Aether Vial, that you don't really care so much about double green, double white. We threw in three core Firewalkers in the sideboard.
Yeah, and anytime you play against a red deck, a mono red deck, and you have access the core Firewalker, your matchup just goes up.
Yeah, and the fact that like you can do like the fact that you know early in the game, maybe on turn one and turn two, you're playing you know threat or whatever, and then on turn three, if you have Vial, you're just flashing in Firewalker. Is pretty strong, especially because you can do it like mid combat. So they maybe will have like tailored their game to playing creatures early because you don't have a blocker, flash it in, block, kill their guy, gain life. It's hard for them to recover from that. So
right.
That's Burn. Amulet is legitimately, I think, the hardest matchup. We don't have access to red for Blood Moon. And as we've talked about before, Amulet is a really hard matchup for a lot of decks.
Right.
It's a totally unfair deck.
I do think you do have some games. So, and you mentioned it before. You have discard, which is decent against them. And you have instant speed targeted discard, which is kind of insane.
Tide Hollow Sculler is awesome against them. They don't play removal in game one, generally, yeah. Other than one Slaughter Pack sometimes. But he's right. A black card anyway, and you have two of them. Resolving him on turn two on the play is often enough to get ahead.
Yeah.
Just getting because
you also you apply pressure, and you apply pressure in a way that they don't run answers to. And there have been a lot of articles out this week that talk about, and we found this during testing, Spellskite is a really good card in this matchup.
Yeah, it's very good.
Like, they can't get rid of it because they don't have removal, and it stops their prime time from being just the card that kills you instantly. And you have enough power in the field that they can't even really attack you because you'll just double block their dude, and you lose one creature and they lose their giant six drop.
Game one, I think I lose 80% in this matchup.
Yep.
I maybe a little better. It's probably 30-70. But the best way to beat them has been like you grind out their hand and you have like, you know, you can block. I've blocked double strike prime time several times with like 18 right. power and just kill it. And then, you know, you have a couple creatures left, or you have, like, you just, they drop deep top.
Like, the crackback is way worse for them than their crack at you.
That's the other thing, is if you can not die to the attack, you often will be able to just swing for lethal. If right. they haven't come out, like, crazy, crazy fast.
Right. And that, I mean, like, an amulet, the grain of salt with that deck is, oh, if it kills you on turn one, doesn't matter. Like, that's how that deck works. It can kill you on turn one or turn two, and if your deck can't put up the fight there, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a terrible matchup. It just means that you are going to lose on their god hand.
Yeah, one card in particular that I don't play in this deck, but because the mana base on this deck is so loose because of Vial and Collected Company, you kind of just can function off a single green source in a lot of cases. I have considered like other two drop options. One thing I've considered is Leonin Arbiter. It's not in the board currently, but it's pretty good against them. That's like solid. It's very solid against if you can resolve it on turn two. Also good with Vial. The other card that's in red that I haven't played in this deck, but I have considered, is Tunnel Ignis, which if anybody has messed around with that card, if you can resolve it on turn two against that deck, like, it's insane. Like, they kind of have to Hive Mind you, because otherwise they're going to take 18.
Right, and they have to Hive Mind you, like, naturally.
Yeah, it's one...
Like, they can't, like, triple play lands.
It's a weird card. It's one red, one colorless for a 2/1 creature. It states, whenever a land comes into play under a target opponent's control... If it's the second or more land that's come in this turn, they take three, which means like a single prime time in this deck usually is like,
which just shuts their ability off because they can fail to find. You can always fail to find with prime.
But
time.
Even their god hand, which is turn two Summerbloom with an amulet,
yeah.
Play what's it called three times,
right?
Is
you,
like
you can just get them.
They're gonna take nine off of the three bounces. Cast Primeval Titan. If they were to search, get two more, they'll take another six and take 15. And if they were then to attack, they would then die. Like,
right.
It literally brick walls the turn in a way yeah. that, like... So it's worth thinking about if you can support it. I mean, maybe people will adapt. Probably people have talked about it. It's a little too cute, maybe. But I think it's pretty cool. The last matchup we have is Affinity.
Yep. Seems like, once again, with Affinity in general, it's similar to Burn. The matchup gets better after sideboard. I know Stony Silence is in the deck, so that generally helps. You're playing white, which helps your Affinity matchup.
You guys might wonder, how do you play Stony Silence in a deck that relies so heavily on Ethervial? And the answer is...
it's two mana, and you just play three of them.
It's like, yeah, you play three in the sideboard. Like, if you draw that in the matchups it's good against, and you play it on turn two, you don't really care. You'll usually come out ahead. Like, there's enough things this deck can do that aren't Ethervial that often, like, I've had games where I resolve Ethervial on turn one, and I don't play my Stony Silence until turn three, until I've resolved a 5/6.
And you can take the Aether Vials out for cards that are good against Affinity. You put in Quasali Pride Mages and Stony Silences, and you just call it a day, and you're just going to play two drops naturally.
Yeah, they always say the best sideboard is just to win. And like you
and Stony Silence just wins.
It's real silly.
It's really good against them. Yeah,
that card and Blood Moon are like two of the most like just stonewall
sideboard cards
I can think of. So yeah, that's the deck, guys.
It's crazy why a red-white deck doesn't exist anywhere.
They do.
They're not good for some reason. Yeah, okay.
So it is really interesting, guys. I love the deck to death. Like, I met a lot of you in Vegas, and we talked a little bit about it. I'm really proud of it.
Shout out to all the guys we met out in Vegas. It was awesome hanging out with you guys, playing Magic. All my opponents, if you beat me, I'm going to get you next time. And if I beat you, well, challenge accepted. Yeah, come find me.
We had so much fun in Vegas. Like, really, and I think Kessler and I both kind of agreed on the way back. Like, it's we're going to try to travel to more modern-centric tournaments. We're really going to try to, like, get on top of that, because it was just great to be around so many players. And, like, it was really cool. A lot of you guys approached us and were like, oh, hey, like, I listened to the podcast. And for us, you guys don't really understand quite how much that means to us doing this. We love talking about Magic, and like sitting in a room talking about Modern is fun for us, but like I enjoy it 900,000 times more knowing that there are people that actually are listening to what we're saying. Please continue to do that. It was definitely really, really cool for me personally. I don't know about you, Kiss.
No, I mean, interacting with people in person is way better than screaming out into the depth of the internet and hoping people listen. So like hanging out with people was great.
Yeah.
Had a great time. Loved playing. Congratulations to you for making day two. I'm never going to hear the end of it.
Thanks, Kessler.
And that's the last time. All right. So, as always, we asked you guys a question. It's late, so we didn't get as many responses as we normally hope. So I asked two questions, and I got one answer for each. The first one was, if you could create your own charm and or command, what would it do? And Brian Brown, who is Brian at Brian BGRP, said, is it command? And honestly, just give him fire and ice with fuse. Fair enough.
Fire ice should be legal in Modern. That card's totally...
I know. Fair. And I mean, I guess electrolyze is our version of fire and ice.
Yeah, but this is sweeter because you can play it for two.
And the next question was best control card in Modern. And Rob Bovill at Rob Bovill, which is... convenient, said Cryptic Command, and I can't agree more.
Card is insane. Yeah. It costs two on both ends. The reason Fire Ice is probably not legal in Modern, I think the reason that they don't make it legal is because it allows you in a blue deck to play a card that taps their land during their upkeep on turn two and draws a card.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Don't get me wrong. I know how good it is.
in Legacy, it's not as much of a problem because so many of the things you play are at instant speed and cost one or two. But in Modern, like...
Twin can shut a person down on turn two so they can't get a thing in play, and then on turn three they win.
Well, then they just do the same thing.
Yeah, they lock a person
out. Pestermite or Deceiver.
No, like, it's really good.
It'd be too good.
Yep, I agree.
Maybe. I don't know. I think that hurts sweet.
Yes. All right, so speaking of Twitter, we are at the MMCast. I am at Kess Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
And, you know, we hope you guys like our podcast. We have a sister podcast. You guys should go check that one out. It's about Commander, so it's a little bit more casual. But they're pretty cutthroat. I've played Commander with them. They're kind of way too good at that game. So check them out. They're the Command Zone. They're also on RocketJump.com. Rate us on iTunes. It's important. We're going to be giving packs out. We finally got our Modern Masters 2015 packs in the grab bag. So we pulled them out of the bag just recently and sent them out. You'll find out what you get when you get them in the mail. And that's it for today. That's the podcast.
Super sweet.
Sweet. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.